So, my name is Alistair Spears. I'm a senior operations PM in the Office team. And I've spent the last 3 years focused on Office 365 migration, server-side migration, SharePoint migration. And we're here to talk about the client. So it's kind of interesting to change tactics a bit. We've talked over the last few years about Office 365. It's all been about Exchange migration, mail migration, content migration, kind of those server-side workloads. We're really here to talk about the client today. So kind of before we get on, show of hands, who's using Office 365 today for Exchange backend? Okay.
That's most of the room.
Most of the room. Who's using 365 Pro Plus? A few people as well. Okay, excellent. Awesome. Well, I remember when it was Yoni and I standing up here these 3 years ago.
Yep.
We barely released the product, had a whole bunch of problems. So thank you very much for bearing with us. It's a much better product now from all that feedback.
It was pretty good back then.
It was pretty good back then. Yeah. So Yoni Kirsch is our Microsoft valued professional, expert in everything Office client, Office 365 Pro Plus deployment. I've been working with Yoni for, 8 years now.
8 years at least.
First as a customer of Microsoft, now as one of our partners helping other customers. And you've been in this space since forever.
Yeah, about 12 or 15 years in desktop management. Spent quite a bit of time working in the Windows deployment space. And one day, probably 8 or 9 years ago, Alistair called me up and said, hey, I would like it very much if you became an expert in Office deployment. And here we are.
And he listened.
Yeah.
Now I ask him the hard questions, so you can all do the same at the end of the session. So what are we going to cover today? We'll talk a little bit about Office 2016. Show of hands, who's on Office 2016 already? A few people. Great. So you've seen all this.
We should ask that question differently. Can I get a show of hands of whose entire organization that they work for is on Office 2016? Okay, that's more accurate. That's like three guys now. You liked your show of hands better, I know.
It's cramping my style already.
I'm a details guy.
Jeez. We'll talk about Office 365 Pro Plus specifically. And then we'll talk about all the problems with Office clients and what we think we've done to fix it. Yoni will keep me honest and tell me what I haven't done yet to fix it. And hopefully we'll end the session with a compromise that we both agree that it's a great product and we should all deploy it. So, modern productivity. What's new in Office 2016? The biggest thing for IT is kind of the way that we deliver Office. We've changed to this notion of technology as a service, delivering a client software, just like we treat Exchange or SharePoint. This notion of having up-to-date, that cloud-ready desktop kind of capabilities of being able to very quickly patch, update, and stream out features as well. The old model for Office was we just spent 3 years working on a particular product. We released it. We took a year off. It was awesome. We kind of go around and think about, what should we build next? What's the future going to look like 5 years, 10 years out, the features that we should invest in? We spent a year building those features, and then a year ironing out as many bugs as we could. And then we released it, and then used it. And that three-year cycle was such a long time. It's challenging for you guys. Your businesses change over 3 years. Your teams change. Your priorities change. Technology changes over 3 years. So that cycle, as fun as it was, awesome to work a third of the time, we just can't do it anymore. We have to have this faster approach.
It's worth considering as well that 3 year cycle, when you think about it, can in fact be more than 3 years from the time that someone comes up with an idea for a feature that should go into Office to when it's released. Because of course, if you come up with your idea in the final year or maybe even the halfway through the year before that, halfway through the previous 3 year cycle, you might miss the boat.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have to wait for the next one. So it might be 5 years before a feature can see the light.
There are actually only certain times of the year we were allowed to have new ideas. The rest of the time we had to just work on those old ideas. And of course, that also meant that you'd be deploying every 3 years, which of course all of you were. Every 3 years, you deployed a new version. No one ever skipped one. No one waited 5 years, 10 years. Anyone have a SOE long over 10 years old? No one. A couple of people. Wow. Yeah.
A couple. While we're here, just a show of hands. Anyone still running Office 2003? Well, we have
there
one
we
guy.
Yep.
There's always one guy. Thank you.
Classic. So we really changed the way that we built Office, and we're working on Office. But before we get into this, this is the question that I've been asked a lot this week already at this conference. So I thought we'd start with this before we get into the product. I'm on Office 365 Pro Plus today. I log into the portal. I saw the press release that Microsoft released Office 2016, and all I see is 2013. So what's going on? So what's going on is a staged automatic upgrade rollout right now. So we're in this kind of interesting stage right now, and it's really it's a learning experience for us. There's not many organizations in the world that do it like this, that deliver enterprise software as a service out to so many clients, millions of PCs running Office and Office 365 that we manage. And so the approach we've taken is this staged rollout. As an administrator, you can all go and get the Office 365 Pro Plus brackets 2016 product right now. It's part of the first release approach, so if you enable your user or your whole tenant for first release, you'll be able to download that. Or you can use the content delivery network tools, the ODT, the Office deployment tool, to actually run and pull down that build directly from the ODT. But essentially what's happening right now is we're focusing on upgrading all of the home users, all of the consumer users. These home users, we really think of as our guinea pigs. There's a whole bunch of really interesting and awkward stuff that we find in enterprises. And generally, when you have enterprise problems of major Excel spreadsheets that your business runs on, we want to take a little bit more time testing, managing those ones. Home users, your home budget, your shopping list, we're a little bit more cavalier about. So we're actually upgrading them now. And essentially, the approach we look at is about 1% to 5% a day. We sort of scale up. We start with a few PCs. Then we start rolling out to tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands, now to tens of millions. Essentially, that approach is all about validating. And so even though we're rolling it out, we're actually watching the telemetry of the service. Like, what is the success rate of install? What are the issues that are being reported back through the CEIP, the Customer Experience Improvement Program, that's sending back anonymized telemetry back to Microsoft? So we spend a lot of time analyzing that data to make sure how that auto upgrade is perceiving. And we're constantly fixing things. And so what you see right now is, in this early cycle, we're actually fixing those issues every week and every month, and driving out new builds, new improvements to not only the client itself, but also the delivery technology behind the scenes in Office 365 and through our content delivery networks and how we improve that. So we expect to be done with the home users relatively shortly, actually. And we had a decision to make. Do we start rolling out the business customers in December? We thought about that. We thought that would be great, because then we can all take Christmas off, because the job will be done. But then we thought, you know what? Businesses don't generally like to roll out features in December. So we're going to take a break, and we'll start in January. And so in January, we'll start rolling out our Office 365 business users. These are essentially our small business licenses of Office. Generally, it's 5 to 10 users. You know, smaller organizations will use those. And we'll do that similar approach, rolling out 5% a day, testing, watching those issues, making sure anything that rolls out is actually fixed. And finally, we'll get to Office 365 Pro Plus. This is our enterprise SKU. It's the one with all the features. It's the one that, you know, even though you can get it as a one user or a 10 user or a 50 user, it's really designed for those large organizations as well. And this one, with all of the niceness of SAP add-ins and Oracle connectivity and macros from 20 years ago and access databases that control the Eastern Seaboard's electricity grid, we're going to take our time with those, and that's what we'll start in February as well. All the learnings that we've got from those home users will go in, all the learnings from the business users, and what you'll have in Office 365 Pro Plus is a stabilized version. And we essentially refer to this February build as essentially like our Service Pack 1. So that's what we're looking at there. And it's that Service Pack 1 that will be the automatic upgrade for the Office 365 Pro Plus users. It's not an actual Service Pack 1. We're calling it a different name, but we'll get to that a little later in this presentation. So there's some rules around the automatic upgrade. We don't just blast this out there. That would be generally bad. Firstly, your Office client needs to be set to have those automatic updates turned on. It has to have received the latest Office 2013 update. You have to be a subscriber. The PC has to meet Office system requirements. The PC has to have enough disk space to actually cache the full upgrade download. That's an important consideration. For the last 3 years, what you've been getting is monthly deltas as Office 365 Pro Plus has been upgraded month to month with the latest features. With the change to Office 2016, that's a pretty big download. Essentially, it's about 1 gig plus language packs that will be downloaded to your environment silently in the background before the install happens as well. And for any PCs that don't meet this auto criteria, you'll need to look at a manual upgrade down the track as well. Also important to note here that this is a PC by PC upgrade. We're not upgrading whole users at a time. We're not upgrading whole tenants at a time. So this automatic upgrade will happen to PCs. So if you have 100 PCs in the room, 5 PCs will be upgraded on one day, 5 the next, et cetera, et cetera.
And to be clear, there's no control over which PCs at an enterprise
you don't need control.
Level.
Yep. So automatic upgrade, it's pretty straightforward. Once we finish downloading that 1 gig package, which will be pretty fast because we're all on pretty fast networks and those sorts of things,
of course.
We've cached that down in the background. Once we've downloaded that silently in the background, we're actually going to pop up your users, this box here.
Onto every computer, right?
To every, well, yeah. One computer at a time.
Well,
so once that computer's downloaded, then we'll pop up this message to say, hey, update Office. Click this button. In the 2007 days when we were building Office 2007, we found that people weren't clicking the new ribbon button in the top, the round, we called it the Office Jewel. It was really the round, awkward-looking file menu. No one was clicking on it, so we thought, well, should we change it to a square and put file? No, that took us 3 years to have that thought. We made it flash red.
We just had this
to draw attention
in the wrong month.
To it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We made it flash red because people like clicking on red flashing buttons. feedback to that was IT loves clicking on red flashing buttons, users don't. So this update Office won't flash red. It's not a red bar, it's a yellow bar.
Do you need admin rights to click on that button?
No, you can click on it all you like.
Oh, so any of your users can
yes.
just click on that button whenever
then
they want.
Then they'll need admin rights to click the next button, though,
right.
Because they're going to require elevation to start the process. So then we'll essentially prompt the user to shut down any open Office 2013 applications, shut them down, and then we'll start our nice installation pre-check. This is an old slide. We have a much better looking first run experience there now as well. So that all sounds pretty straightforward and pretty easy. So we'll get everyone automatically upgraded in about March or April,
sounds
I think.
Good.
What do you think?
Well, there are some pretty clever guys in here. They've probably figured out that I'm setting you up here, right?
Yeah.
Who thinks that's a good idea? Everyone happy? Jeez, I didn't even get one. Not one person's? Okay. So no, I think that's a terrible idea.
Okay.
there are some pretty serious problems with it, and it seems that you've put some on a slide for me and everything.
That's right, yep.
And so some of those problems, of course, are going to be the bandwidth implications here. If you've got 1,000 computers, you start downloading a gigabyte of, and sometimes it can be up to 2 gig plus, you know, including language packs.
That's right.
Although Visio and Project tend not to affect that too much, which is cool. But of course, that's a lot of downloads, and you know, like you say, we do all have unlimited internet connectivity on our MPLS networks. But say you didn't, that could be a problem for you. And of course, even if that wasn't an issue, then that it doesn't take into consideration the fact that larger organizations are not going to want to make such a change without having some level of control over that. So, as you've probably guessed, we do have a solution. You're not locked into this approach. And for those of you in the room who have are currently running Office Pro Plus and have your automatic updates turned on, which I really hope you do because it's, you know, making life a lot more simple for you if you do have that, then there are a couple of options that you have to disable this automatic update, or there's one main option that you have. Of course, you could just turn off automatic updates altogether, but the problem you'd have then, and we'll get onto more of this in the 2016 product later on, but the problem you'd have is that if you stopped updates, then you'd have a 2013 Pro Plus client on your SOE, but it wouldn't be receiving security fixes. So you'd, of course, fall out of compliance from a security point of view. So there's a new update to the group policy files that will allow you to turn off the automatic update to 2016, but continue to receive security fixes in the meantime.
Yeah.
And
now, it's important to apply this one before February, not
yes.
afterwards as well. We should point that one out. So And then the notion here is this auto-upgrade approach works really well for a lot of interesting scenarios. When you have road warriors that are working from home or out traveling, mobile devices, bring your own device sort of scenarios, choose your own device scenarios where you really don't care about the client. And of course, home users, it's working for very well as well. But if you're in a managing environment, you really want to manage these bandwidth implications. You can use things like System Center to deploy these, manage that deployment, and essentially time it so you roll out everyone at once inside of your organization here as well.
Or not. You might want to take a staged approach that you were in control of.
That's right. You could stage it out with, yeah.
And if you've attended sessions in the past about Office Pro Plus, you should have a good understanding of how the distribution of patches works in the existing 2013 product.
Yeah.
And then we're about to turn all that on its head anyway. So.
Yeah. So that gets you to Office 2016 if you're already on it. So it's available now. You can actually go download, deploy it yourself, and get on to the new 2016. You can wait for the auto upgrade to be rolled out to your particular PCs. Or you can do it all yourself through things like System Center or any other tool that you're using to distribute updates to Office 365 Pro Plus. So there's a couple of things that we've been investing in the 2016 client for end users. And we really didn't focus on building a whole bunch of new features. There's 4,000 features just in the core authoring apps, the classics. We like to think of Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook. There's 4,000 features. We thought long and hard about adding more features, and we would love to add more features, but really the thing that we focused on instead was adding the glue between features to make the kind of scenario, the end-to-end scenario, a little bit more sensible and make a little bit more sense. And so the kind of things we focused on in this release were all about teamwork. How do we make it easier for you to share, collaborate, work together? Also at the same time, we know that a lot of organizations are looking at deploying Windows 10 at the same time and updating that entire desktop image so with Windows 10 and Office 2016. And so there's a bunch of integration that we've done between not only Windows 10, the platform and the deployment platform, but also through things like Cortana, single sign-on, the Continuum and the mobile app capability as well. And finally, there's some great new features, just the core authoring experiences to round out some of those scenarios as well. So let's take a look at a couple of those. And who was in our demo session on Tuesday? Anyone? A couple of people? Who's in the session on the Cloud Ready desktop yesterday? A few people as well? Okay. For those that won't, we'll show just a couple of features really quickly here. This one is a pretty simple one. This is Yoni doing the demo with no hands. This is his mind. This is the notion of just modern attachments, really being able to roam the settings that most recently used documents list between applications. And so we know, for instance, that you're in Word, you're authoring Word documents, jump to Outlook. When you hit Add Attachment, rather than dump you back to the File Open dialog box where you can pick any sort of file from any different folder, we'll show you the files that you were working on last. And so popping that up, making that really simple, very simple feature. But a very powerful feature as well. And this shaves a lot of clicks off. We do a lot of time and motion studies in Office to identify how do we make people more productive. In many ways, the less of features you use in Office is actually the more productive. The less things you click to get to a particular command, to get to what you do, is a very powerful thing. So this is an example of where we've looked at what makes you more productive, how can you do an entire scenario faster, rather than just use more buttons and click more icons as well.
Worth mentioning with this feature, which is absolutely one of my favorite in Office 2016, that most recently used list that appears when you open and author a new email is not limited to documents that you were editing in Office, right?
That's right.
So yeah. Say you downloaded a file from your web browser and saved it on your desktop, or you saved it in some obscure folder and you can't remember where it was, you author a new email, hit the attach, and it's going to be right there at the top of the list.
The other nice thing it does as well is it roams across devices. So if you were working on a Word document or a spreadsheet or a PowerPoint presentation on your tablet or your phone, and you got into the office in the morning, and then you wanted to attach the document you were working on, it would show up in that menu as well. So we're roaming these features across devices that you're working with as well. Likewise, if you're switching between a laptop and a desktop, those most recently used document settings roam across all of those devices. So Excel sharing, this is a pretty common one. We've had this around for a while, and it's pretty straightforward. You know, our users have seemed to got the hang of sharing documents in SharePoint when they're looking at a web browser. People seem to understand that things in web browsers have URLs. URLs are universal. You can share a URL, and someone else can open that document and share it. And so we've added things like this to make it easy to share URLs. But in Office, we didn't have that same ability. So we really wanted to focus that share approach a lot more. It was hidden in the backstage in the file menu previously. Now we're essentially exposing that in the top right, making it easy that you can just invite someone with an email address. And the nice thing here is that Office takes care of adding the permissions of that document, giving the user edit rights in OneDrive or SharePoint or wherever that document is stored, so the user can then work on that particular feature as well.
It'll even email the user and tell them that you've shared the file with them.
That's right, yeah. And that's kind of nice because it also enables you, when you start working on that core document together and you're not really relying on kind of a USB drive or your own storage, you can start to do some interesting things about real-time editing of those documents. And this is a feature that we've been wanting to do this feature for years. We introduced the kind of the core pieces of that functionality in Office 2007 when we moved to the XML file format. And the notion of the XML file format is that everything is a node, so you can essentially break off particular nodes of that XML document and assign them permissions. Rather than having permissions on an entire document, you don't lock the entire document anymore, and everyone's seen that Excel annoying menu that says someone else is editing this Excel spreadsheet and it's locked. In this case, we don't lock the entire document, we can actually just lock that XML node, that paragraph, that bullet item, or something like that. And then you can work on that document in real time as well. Depending on how you like to work, this is either the best feature ever or the most frustrating feature you'll ever see. Multiple people typing in the same document. The thing I like to do is really copy and paste 3 pages of content while someone else is trying to type and their cursor jumps around from page 4 to page 7. But anyway, really interesting feature here. Across Word today, Excel web app, it's coming soon to Excel and PowerPoint as well. And all of these things give us the capability to really tap into this machine learning capabilities in Office 365 as well. The documents that you're generating and saving in Office 365, there's a whole bunch of spare compute cycles that we have. It turns out we get a lot more usage of Exchange during business hours than we do at 2 a.m. at night. And so if you're like us, and you think, well, what are we doing with all that spare server capacity? Should we like maybe use that server capacity to create an online bookstore? No, that seems like a silly use of spare capacity. instead, we want to do some really interesting things around machine learning. And so we run statistical algorithms over the content, emails, the day's events. It's how we started looking for root causes of service incidents and service health. And that was a really interesting step forward in terms of how we get to our 3.9s and now really trending around 4.9s and 5.9s reliability across Office 365. But it also has an interesting use case in terms of the documents as well. Understanding metadata and being able to infer metadata out of a document rather than just relying on the user to input metadata. Anyone a document management specialist or records management guru that's tried to implement folksonomies and taxonomies and all sorts of classification schemes, and anyone using Titus or any of those crazy plugins to try and classify all their emails. It's a whole lot of work to do that. And so we've been using machine learning to try and classify all of the content in a user context. And the first example of this is something called Delve. Delve is essentially showing you that information that's been classified, grouped, and really documents that's related to you and trending around you. And this is kind of just the first step of what we can start to do in machine learning in Office 365. Something that we never thought you'd be able to do in machine learning and artificial intelligence is things like creative. Computers will never understand art, right? Computers will never know how to play chess. Computers will never understand, you know, how to do really good graphic design. The reality is, that's absolutely false. They can absolutely do that. Graphic design is just another algorithm. And so what you see here is Sway. It's a technology, it's part of Office 365. You can really think of it as a preview and an incubator of a whole bunch of different ideas. And this idea is that the WYSIWYG is going away. We kind of reached that peak capability of a user being able to author a document. In the old days of desktop publishing, you were really only limited by your imagination and your creativity. You could make the best looking document you wanted to, unless you had really poor taste. Now, show of hands, who has users that have really poor taste? Anyone? Anyone? Yeah, a couple of people.
Who has really poor taste?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. I got you on that one.
Battleship Gray is an entirely valid choice of interface. So this is Sway, and essentially what Sway does is it takes the creative design aspects out of that particular document and lets you focus on the content. What you see here is the user authoring the content and really just setting up kind of a hierarchy of content. I have some paragraphs that are important. I have a picture that's important. This picture is more important than this picture and the story I'm trying to say here. And essentially, once we type in all of that information, we can essentially let it design and let the machine design the software itself. What you see now is that content essentially being converted into a tablet view. And this tablet view is showing that content nice and easy to swipe and see all the pictures. You can see the color palette has actually been picked up from the photos that we've added. We've inferred the right color palette that we can apply that particular document just by the photos that have been added and those sorts of things. And the nice thing about this, it's happening at runtime, not design time. I don't have to think a lot about where that content will be delivered. If I'm viewing it on a tablet, or I'm viewing it on a mobile phone, or I'm viewing it on a really big stretchy screen across two monitors with a video of myself between them, I don't have to worry about that.
We can let. Does that happen often?
Sorry?
Does that happen often, that last scenario?
All too often. It's actually better to watch it in four times right here. And so this capability of being able to do that and let the machine take over understanding is really bringing that responsive design to the next level, making responsive content that you can focus on telling that content story. And over time, we expect to get to a point like this that rather than deciding whether you should build something as a PowerPoint deck or a Word document, don't worry about it. Just write the content in the story you want to tell with all the important facts. The machine should be smart enough to work out that if you're using it for a PowerPoint or a presentation style, we can actually flip that content into something that makes sense in a presentation style. We can extract out those key points and put the rest into the speaker notes, for instance. And if you want to convert to a Word document or something like that, we can even essentially pick up that and decide that this is the content that's important. Let's rearrange this. Let's put bold typeface here. Let's blow up these items. Let's pull out the most important quotes with the most statistically improbable phrases that are the most important things, and all those sorts of things. So this is really just the start of that, but you kind of see it coming through more and more in Office, and you'll see more of this over the next few months as we start to ship features on a much more regular cadence to Office as well. So that's some cool things for users, but really the fun starts when we get to the IT side as well.
Yes, with data loss prevention.
That's right. Security. Everyone likes more security. We added more security. So you'll be happy about that. We're also bringing in some more flexible options around how you manage that deployment. It's great that we can stream down automatically from the cloud. And you don't have to worry about patches or updates, and you can really just be left to the devices of Microsoft at how we think those patches should roll out. But we also know that you want some more options of how you want to roll out those updates internally. It's great that features can be released every single month. Essentially at a whim, as fast as possible, and I can be always up to date with the latest and greatest. But sometimes I want to do testing. Sometimes I want to take a little bit longer. The other thing that we really focused on this release from an IT perspective was Outlook. Outlook is, you know, the most interesting product in Office. And the reason that is because we have Exchange in the background. Exchange, you know, in the time we've shipped 2013 to 2016, the mailbox size of Office 365 has gone from 5 gigs to 10 gigs to 25 gigs to 50 gigs to effectively unlimited. And what that means for the Outlook client, this poor thing that is running on more and more mobile processors, on thinner and thinner laptops, on tablets and those sorts of things, is that all of a sudden, Outlook is doing almost more processing than Excel can do when you're looking at a massive pivot table model.
And it's interesting to consider, I don't know if this statistic still holds true, but certainly a few years ago, Outlook.exe was the most run non-Windows binary on any PC in the world.
That's right. You know, Outlook works harder than most of our users, probably most people in this room. Outlook starts working when you get to work. You don't shut it down. It runs all day. You get home and open up your laptop. It's running in the background. constantly processing. There's not many client apps that work that hard when you compare it to Word and Excel. And so the Outlook team really focuses on how we can improve performance across the board there, how we can make sure that 50 gigabyte mailboxes are just as fast as 200 megabyte mailboxes, how we can make sure that that asynchronous syncing of content from Exchange down to Outlook is faster than ever, and how we can improve the storage on the device itself and give you options to say, hey, maybe I don't need the entire mailbox synced to my tiny little netbook or something like that.
Reed, maybe I don't have enough space on my SSD to sync my entire mailbox.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's a couple of areas just to cover there. So we talked about Office 365 Pro Plus. Many of the people are in the room. There is also something called Office 2016 Professional Plus. Two things that are eerily similar, but totally different. Office 2016 Professional Plus is what we consider our volume licensing version of Office. On September 22nd, when we finished the development of Office 2016, we packaged up Office 2016 Professional Plus, we put it in an MSI, and we're leaving it there, and we won't touch it again, apart from critical security packs and those sorts of things. The MSI will never see another service pack. There'll never be another service pack for 2016 Professional Plus. And I say that now, and I'm regretting it as I'm saying it.
I was about to say, and you'll never need a hard drive bigger than 50 megabits.
We'll find a reason to change it. I'll just make sure we call it something different. Feature pack. 2016 Professional Plus. There won't be another service pack. We've kind of given up on that model of servicing Office. Now there will just be monthly updates for that 2016 for security features. But we expect that 2016 client to look the same as it does today, as it will do in 10 years where we finally decommission it from extended support. Office 365 Pro Plus, the day we shipped 2016, and we made that MSI, we put it aside, never to be touched again. We added features into the 365 Pro Plus. We continue to work on 365 Pro Plus. The Office 365 Pro Plus product is actually an active branch of code that we're continuing to add features and updates and improvements to. So much so that when we do finally get around to looking at what the next version of MSI Office will be, whenever we decide to make that, the Office 365 Pro Plus will have morphed over time into that and essentially have beat you there in monthly updates and a trickle of features rather than this massive wave of features that you need to wait 3 or 4 years to see. So that's an important differentiation. Why did we choose those names? I have no idea. It's super confusing. There's Pro Plus and there's Professional Plus, very different model. The decoder ring is really, if it says 365, you're getting always up-to-date updates. And if it says 2016, it looks like it did in 2016.
Unless it says Office 365 Pro Plus in brackets 2016 version.
Yeah, that's my best approach of describing it so far right now. Office 365 Pro Plus, brackets 2016.
Now, Alistair, I get the feeling that you don't want people to use this product.
The 2016 Professional Plus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, we love all of our children in the Office team. we've spent a lot of good time at work. We have a lot of good memories on that. It reminds us of our younger self. Right now, it reminds us of a younger self that maybe is only 3 months younger. In 2019, it's going to look back and it's going to have all sorts of weird Taylor Swift memes associated with it. And it's going to look really, really old. But we love it. And it's a perfectly valid choice. If you want a client that will look the same as it does now, as it does in 10 years' time, if you don't expect a lot of changes to happen in your Office client environment, and if you don't want a lot of changes in your Office client environment, Office 2016 Professional Plus is the way to go. We expect more people, though, don't want to worry about that, want to get off this train of doing these massive client updates every 5 to 10 years. It's just a challenge to go to the business and ask for the amount of money it does for this huge capital expenditure project every 5 years. And it's probably getting harder and harder. And so the idea of these smaller updates that you can just manage, you can build the muscle around and treat it as a business as usual approach, more and more organizations we think will like that model rather than the other model. But they're entirely valid approaches. If you're the type of business that thrives on major cash injections into your IT department every few years, then 2016 Professional Plus. And then good luck to you, because you're probably getting a Surface 4 and a new iPhone and all those things at the same time.
The Pro Plus approach I like to call the broccoli approach.
The broccoli approach.
You don't have kids, Alistair, so you wouldn't understand.
That's right.
Anyone in the audience who has kids would probably understand the broccoli approach. You know, you want to get your kids to eat the broccoli, cut it up into really small pieces, hide it in amongst the good stuff, and then a little bit at a time.
Interesting.
It's the broccoli approach, you see.
It's a good approach, yeah. I like to think of it more as a superannuation approach.
Okay.
I don't see the benefits now, but over time, I'll be happy. So 365 Pro Plus, continuous updates, shorter time to market, the ability to ship features much faster. There's no 3-year dev cycle when it comes to Office anymore. Every team, and there's about 500 different teams of the 5,000 engineers that make up the Office team, all working on shipping features independently now. Before, we had 5,000 engineers that we generally had to get pointed in the right direction. If anyone's tried to herd 3 engineers together, you know that's kind of a challenge. Imagine the challenge is around 5,000, all trying to aim for shipping code ready for production on the one date in 3 years' time. That's essentially the challenge we had in Office. Now we let them ship whenever they like, and so there's a much shorter time to market, but it changes the way that we think about those updates going forward as well.
And there's more of a reason for that. I think we've kind of glossed over the fact here that you might be thinking, well, you know, what's the virtue of being able to ship new features in small chunks on a regular basis versus these big deployments? And of course, if you work in an enterprise context, you might see the benefit from not having to do that big step change like we just spoke about. But it's worth considering as well that as you invest more and more in the Office 365 stack all up, those features are coming into the server-side workloads, into Exchange and into SharePoint and Skype for Business, on that same cadence. And so if you're 3 years behind on your client, you're not going to be able to take advantage of these new features as they drop into the server-side workloads as well.
That's right. Yeah. So this, you know, where I sit in our Seattle office, surrounded by Microsoft people in a campus full of about 100,000 different Microsoft engineers all working on different products, this seems like a really good idea. But Yona, you have to live in the real world.
Some of the time, at least.
Some of the time. So, what are the challenges that you could see us, you know, facing in this sort of approach?
Again, you've put them up on a nice slide
right
for me. And I think it's really important to look back over the last 3 years. And like you said, it was 3 years ago that we stood just next door and essentially announced the Office Pro Plus product. And since then, we've seen some really exciting uptake. There have been a large number of big enterprise organizations that have deployed Office Pro Plus. And for the most part, there have been some really positive outcomes. The deployment mechanism, the new click-to-run model with its binary differential compression and the ability to stream those new builds out, run side by side with previous versions of Office, have really led to some great outcomes in a number of customer stories. But having watched those over the intervening couple of years, there have certainly been a few scenarios with the customers that I've worked with anyway that have that some people have stumbled over. And those relate to a few things. So in the first instance, we see some challenges with organizations that have a mindset and an infrastructure that's built around a lot of customization in the Office space. Office obviously being probably the most customized software package or the most extended software package on the planet.
Until Minecraft came along.
Until Minecraft, right. It was going to be Microsoft Office 365 Minecraft edition soon.
Maybe.
Did I let that slip?
Yeah.
But no, of course, with all the extensibility that goes on in Office, large organizations rely on the fact that that Office stack doesn't necessarily change that often. And whilst we have spoken now about the virtue and the advantage of changing that Office stack, a lot of organizations have some work to do before their broader IT and developer community can absorb a change in approach like that. So that's certainly something that has come up, and the result of that has been companies looking, or individuals in companies looking for more flexibility around how they deploy those builds and at what time. And the biggest thing, and we'll address this very shortly through the presentation, the biggest thing that comes up is to say, okay, well, maybe I have a group of users over here who have a specific macro, or they have a specific add-on or use case that is going to be affected by this new build of Office that's coming out next month. And, you know, we'd expect these scenarios to become fewer and fewer as time goes on. If you're familiar with the new app model for Office, you'd probably expect the same. But they will come up, and you know, when someone in an organization says, okay, we need to stop this build from going to these 50 users or these 100 users, and that's something that's possible with the Pro Plus build today. You can create group policy, or you can create some customization in whatever desktop management tool you're using, SCCM, with PowerShell scripting. I've seen, I don't know if he's in the room at the moment, but there's a very, very clever engineer from one of my customers who's built hundreds of lines of code of customization to allow for this kind of process where you say, okay, this new build's coming, we don't want to stop the entire organization from staying up to date, but we need to hold off for these 50 users or these 100 users for 3 months, 6 months, something like that, until that problem can be remediated. This presents a problem for these 50 users, though, because in the existing Office Pro Plus update mechanism, there is only one, I suppose, branch of builds that come along. So the next build to come next month, say that's the build that has this problem bit of code that we need to hold back from these users, that next build also contains the security fixes for that month. And the one after that contains the security fixes and this new feature or whatever the case is. So if you do hold that build back from those users, they stop receiving security fixes and potentially have a compliance problem from a security standpoint. So that's something that's concerned organizations who have this kind of situation, and something that I'll step you through the solution to very soon. So in addition to that, we have some organizations that are really looking to bring down the effort and the energy that goes into maintaining these deployment cycles. You know, if you have a new build of Office that has to go out that might have new features in it every month, we need to make sure that that's an efficient process that doesn't increase the amount of workload on the desktop team, or the change management team, or whoever else might be involved. And of course, lastly, and this relates back to the first point, is that we need to make sure that we have a more flexible approach that allows larger organizations or more complex organizations more time to test their solutions, or perhaps more time for the rest of the community to test their solutions, so that when they do deploy them, they're a good, stable fit for everything.
So then, you know, really the challenge is then about management and how we improve management of the Office 365 Pro Plus clients as well. And so there's a bunch of things that we're looking at adding to make that an easier process, a more continual process as well. You know, right down from very low-level things, like being able to manage the network traffic a lot better, changing the way that we distribute the bits, simplifying the activation, and more flexible approaches around updates as well.
So why don't we step through those quickly?
Sure. So bits. Tell me about bits. What is Bits?
So Bits is brand
new technology we invented in Office?
No.
Okay.
So Bits, or Background Intelligent Transfer Service, I believe it stands for, is a technology that becomes aware of the available network bandwidth on a given network. So the problem statement here, we've used another technology that already exists in the Pro Plus client, binary differential compression, which allows us to have a given client download only the delta between the build that they have on their machine at the moment and the build that they need. So instead of downloading a whole gig of a new build every month, we might only download the delta. So it might only be somewhere between, say, 50 and 150 megabytes of change. But still, if you have thousands of computers that are all pulling that from a remote location, that amount of traffic may still saturate a small network link on a satellite site, for example. So what Bits does is it's aware of the available network bandwidth, and it will throttle that download to a point where it's not going to impact the productivity of that site.
Right.
So that's a pretty cool new feature that, in conjunction with the binary differential compression, will give us quite a good experience for smaller sites.
So it's not a new technology for Windows and Windows Server. It's been around for quite some time.
Absolutely. I don't know exactly off the top of my head, but it's a
I think it was
time.
Actually Windows 2000 or something in the dark old days. But it's great that Office finally supports that, so we're patting ourselves on the back for finally joining the party on that one. That's what I love about an Australian audience. I can be as cynical and practical as I want.
And you can't elsewhere?
Exactly. In America, people take it very offensively when I start making fun of features that seem like common sense that we finally got around to implementing. I think it's a great idea.
And here I was thinking it was only me who found your cynicism endearing.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, what about Config Manager? I heard that people like to deploy Office with Config Manager.
I heard that as well. In fact, hands up if you like deploying Office with Config Manager. That's right. Almost everyone.
We should get on that one.
Yep. Sorry?
We should get
on
that one.
Yes, we're on it. We're on
okay.
it. And hands up if you would like to be able to update Office with Config Manager as well. Okay. Hands up if you're running Office Pro Plus today and you're updating it with Config Manager. It's because you pretty much can't, or it's not a very effective. There is no streamlined or effective method of doing that today. So very good news and some nice announcements here that were promised. We only started talking about Config Manager integration at Ignite North America back in May, was it?
Yeah.
And in the intervening period, the Office team and the System Center team have sat down and had a couple of beers, and they finally decided to team up and crack this one. So here's some good news. In Config Manager vNextdoor 2016, as we can now call it, there will be very tight integration between the Office Pro Plus updating process and Config Manager. So you'll be able to go through a number of clicks. It's integrated with the WSUS, or the Software Update Point, or SUP functionality inside Config Manager. And it will allow you to push those, be notified of those new Office Pro Plus builds via WSUS, to download them straight into SCCM as a package from the content distribution network, to push them out to your distribution points, and then trigger your clients to install them and report back on the results all in one process, which is automated and hands-off. Sound good?
Yeah. So one of the challenges with that, and you kind of why we didn't do it earlier.
Well, the biggest challenge with that is that no one has Config Manager 2016.
Right. Yep.
Hands up if you've got Config Manager 2012 R2. Everyone, it's good, right?
Okay.
You like it? You're going to keep it for a while? Anyone running that on SQL Server 2008? Only a couple of people. Everyone's on SQL Server 2012? That's cool. You can do a seamless upgrade to Config Manager 2016. But if you're not going to do that on release date, then there are potentially going to be those of you in the room who are going to continue to run Config Manager 2012 R2. And so there's good news around that as well. If you've looked into this today, you'll note that there are some challenges around Config Manager and getting those updates to push out. And whilst it's not a fully integrated solution, for obvious reasons, it's a big feature change that's not going to come out as a minor patch from the System Center team, the Office team have actually built a small tool that will, and I think we'll talk in more detail about this tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, but there's a small tool that is published today that will allow you to trigger the Office update process and have that be seamlessly pointed towards your distribution points. So if you've already invested heavily in your SCCM distribution points on 2012 R2, you'll be able to have some level of functionality using the package model inside SCCM to do that. So, and again, right. We'll talk about that further later.
Yeah,
on.
And one of the things we didn't want to do was push out a new build of Office every mm-hmm. month through WSUS.
Right.
We thought that generally bad idea. And so what we've done here is the WSUS is actually a notification. And mm-hmm. essentially, we publish now a notification when a new build goes live on the Office content delivery network, with a link to that in WSUS. And so what
in the CDN.
In the CDN, yeah. And what System Center is now doing, Config Manager, is essentially just reading that. It's aware of that notification, and it knows to actually just download that bit direct from the CDN rather than overloading the WSUS environment as well.
Which is going to help because, obviously you'll have a CDN location in pretty much every major city around the world. And again, of course, we'll definitely go into more detail about this tomorrow. It's definitely seen as critical. The engineering and the product teams from the Pro Plus side of things have been working on this very hard for the last 6 months. And this is, I think, the first event globally where we're talking about it
at this
level of detail.
It was actually last week we put up the tech preview for System Center 2016.
Yep.
And it was
that has it in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's all of one WSUS notification now about the 365 Pro Plus, but that's... It's there.
Oh, there are two now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Found a breaking change then.
Yeah. Actually, if you have WSUS, you can go into your WSUS server now and look under the categories, and you'll see Office 365 is mysteriously there in the list, although you can't do anything with it yet. But yeah, so we'll go into detail and reveal all that tomorrow in the deep dive session.
So activation management.
Yes.
Essentially now, the Office clients activate against your Office 365 user account.
Yep.
You can assign them permissions, assign them licenses through the Office 365 interface. And that Office client is actually talking back to Office 365 every day. Essentially, it's trying to talk back every day and say, hey, I'm still there. Am I still a user? Yes, no, anything I should know.
And the user can, of course, look at those activations and manage those and deactivate them if he or she chooses to do so. But funnily enough, at least for me, and I imagine you'll back me up, one of the a very common complaint that I heard, or a very common piece of feedback that I heard from customers, was that their end users would prefer that the administrator be able to manage those installations of Office rather than, I think one of the guys who gave me that piece of feedback is just nodding there. Yeah. So this is the scenario. Organization decides to roll out Pro Plus. They bought some Office 365 licenses. They get the ODT and they push out a build of Pro Plus through System Center, and everybody activates the next morning. That's one of your five installations of Pro Plus consumed. Then they send out an email saying, guys, guess what? You have four copies of Office that you can do whatever you like with. Go to the Office 365 portal and you can download them on any computer you like and enjoy. So that user goes home and they install it on their computer and then their wife's computer or their grandmother's computer or their dog's former owner's computer. And then all of a sudden they've used up their five installs. And so then they go to their auntie's computer and they go to the portal and they go to click install and it says, oh, sorry, you've already used all of your five installs. Please deactivate one and try again. And then when they click OK, they're presented with a screen that shows them their five installs, and they just pick one and they deactivate it. But instead, they call the help desk. And they say, I've used all of my five installs, and it says that I need to deactivate one of the ones that I can see right here on my screen, and I don't know what to do. And apparently that comes up all the time. And of course, the IT administrator or the help desk person would have to talk them through that and would have no visibility of how that works. So congratulations, now you all as administrators have the ability to to deactivate those installations and more importantly view those activations right through the Office 365 portal.
It's kind of an interesting challenge. It's part of a wider problem of users with admin access on the local machines. More and more users have their own admin access, can install their own software, manage their own software. And so in a world where IT is no longer the gatekeeper, IT becomes the groundskeeper of keeping the area healthy.
Okay.
How do you do? And this kind of activation management, one of the things that it can allow you to do is essentially see where those PCs are being activated, the operating systems they're on, and those sorts of things as well, and see if there are remaining activations left. So it's kind of a meeting halfway with IT and user command that you can see what users are doing with Office, how much they're using them, if they're using them at home, what operating systems they're using as well. Very lightweight telemetry, but it's something that we really think about investing in more over time, so that you can have more insight into how your users are using the tools that you're providing them as well.
Should we have a look?
Yeah, let's have a look.
Okay.
It's like you guessed the next slide.
I read them a couple of minutes ago, at least. Give me that. So we're on 7. Lovely. So what you're looking at here is Fast Track Technologies production tenant, and we can see that we have my user account that we filtered out there. And previously, that's all you could really see. If you went into the licenses, you'd be able to see that there were, I've got 6 licenses assigned to me. You can see I've got basically one of everything. And that was all you could see. And this is the new feature that we've just been talking about. So it's probably a little hard to read the text, but what you can see there is that I have 4 installations of Office Pro Plus on my personal account, 1 installation of Project, and 2 installations of Visio. And we can see the name of those computers, what operating system they run, and which date they were installed. And right over on the right-hand side here, we can also choose to deactivate them. So say a user wasn't able to get to that page, or you'd not given them access to that, the administrator can now go through on an individual basis and deactivate those installations of Office Pro Plus.
That's right.
Of course, if you wanted to deactivate all of someone's installations of Office Pro Plus, you could just take their Office Pro Plus license away, and that would have the same effect.
Yeah. So, yeah, nice little feature. It makes it a little easier to manage those users and get visibility into those users as well. Mm-hmm. So, let's jump and talk about the servicing model a bit. You know, one of the challenges that we have here is features coming out every month. Mm-hmm. This constant rain of features and changes to the Office client. And this is really the model that we've worked in the last 3 years, that every month we can essentially release features and security updates at the same time. We refer to this as the current branch. We don't always. We reserve the right to, if we're lucky, because we're not quite sure when we'll finish. We're really bad at estimating. We're kind of like plumbers when it comes to building some of these features. But we call this the current branch, and that as soon as the feature's ready, the latest feature is ready for you in current branch. And so it's great, but what we really want to do, and what organizations have been asking us to do for quite some time, is to break apart the security and the feature updates. Give me the ability to take more time to look at those feature updates, but still give me security updates. And so what we're introducing with Office 2016 is this notion of current branch for business. And what this current branch for business is a horrible name. Firstly, I apologize for that. Windows team named that one. We can only take responsibility for the things with numbers in them. But what you see here is this notion of being able to take the October build and give you 3 months to validate that particular feature, roll out end user communications if you think it'll affect users, allow your testers to test those features, or perhaps even roll out a limited pilot to a flight to a set of your users, a set of your organization, to test and validate and use tools like telemetry to make sure that that feature is deploying appropriately. And so this is current branch for business. Essentially what it allows you to do is rather than have features drop every month inside of your Office client, you can actually pause those features and you'll only have feature drops 3 times a year, in February, in June, and October. That's essentially the servicing model for current branch for business.
And once we get to the next slide here, you'll start to see how we can solve that problem that we were talking about earlier with certain groups inside an organization or maybe a whole organization who need to hold back a feature release whilst continuing to receive security fixes.
That's right. So, and let's look at that from kind of the servicing model right now. In November, we're adding a bunch of features. We've just announced the Morph feature and some of the new interesting features in PowerPoint. Let's say they get added next month in December. Those features won't show up in the current branch for business in February because the current branch for business in February is only containing the features that were released up until October. That's when the current branch started to diverge from the current branch for business. So a feature that gets released after that essentially makes its way into the next current branch for business.
It kind of skips one, right?
And it skips one, yeah.
And I want to say why is that, but I realize that we need to get to the next slide before that makes sense.
Yeah.
So bear with us.
And so this notion of first release, right, if we're doing these changes, we also want to make sure that you get validation, you get time to look at these features in advance of the rest of your users. So we're introducing this concept of first release. And what that means is that in February, even though the February current branch for business is made up of all the features that were out in October the prior year, what you're actually looking at here is this first release approach. And first release, on that February day, the first release build and the current branch in February look exactly the same. So it's essentially loading in all these new features, and then that first release branch will only get security updates. So in the lead up, it'll get 3 more months of security updates before it turns into the current branch. So current branch now is essentially stabilized through that first release
for
project.
For that whole 4 month period.
For the whole 4 month period.
So what we're getting at here is that, you know, the light blue section here, if you have a new feature that is ready to go during that light blue period, and again, the next slide kind of articulates this a bit better, it can't go into CBB1 that we have marked up there because it didn't get a full 4 months to live in the first release. So it needs to wait until February, so it can go into first release in February and then incubate for 4 months before being released in CBB2. Does that make sense?
This is kind of why we think of it as a service pack. Perhaps it'll help if I show kind of an example of a particular feature here as well.
You know, just before you do, I think I should mention to you something that you might not know is that, you know how you were saying that how much you love the name and the acronyms for all the different branches? You know that that acronym CB is actually the aviation short code for a thunderstorm.
Really?
There you go.
Wow.
There must be something in there.
So here's a feature.
Okay.
Cortana's been so successful that we think that the world is ready for intelligent agent assistance again in Office.
Again.
So we're going to codename this feature Clippy. We'll release it.
There he is.
And essentially, Clippy, the Clippy team, about 3,000 engineers working on this one. Years of development work
going into
it. Yep. The machine learning algorithms, the personality is just right. He knows now it's not just about letters, it's also about writing other sorts of documents. Clippy will show up in current branch for business one. Even though it shows up in current branch in October, it'll show up in current branch for business one in February. And essentially, Clippy will enter first release, you'll get first release Clippy in October at that same time, and then he'll slowly make his way into CBB1, CBB1 in that approach. Pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. A couple of months later, we realize actually Clippy isn't good enough. We need to make some product improvements.
He doesn't have the depth of character that he's going to need to have the impact in the market.
So we're going to introduce Clippy with hat. That's our improved Clippy. We're going to introduce this in March. points in the respect of your peers if you can name the meme the hat is based on. Anyone? Yell it out. Scumbag Steve. Yeah, this is Scumbag Clippy. So we're going to ship this one in March, though. We've taken some extra time.
And have a look. This is exactly the same scenario that I was showing on the previous slide, where we have a bit of a delay to make sure that Scumbag's Clippy, is perfectly stable. So if you have look, we're here in March, and if you click the next one, you see you would think that we could get into CBB2, but we can't because first release for CBB2 happened in February, so we've missed the boat. So we go into first release for CBB3 in June, and then Clippy with the hat ends up in CBB3 that launches in October.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a complex physics problem. It's like, you know, three trains leave the station, all traveling at different speeds, blah, blah, blah. But the intention here is that you always get time to test. You always get at least 3 months to validate a new feature, plan for a new feature, and roll out a new feature. The nice thing about this model as well is we don't just stop updating the current branch for business when the new current branch for business comes out. We actually continue to release security updates for that stream of current branch for business for another
4 months.
Essentially 4 months. So what that
and you can see those depicted up in the example.
The gray ones. So all of these builds are fully supported. This isn't like beta or demo or anything like that. These builds are all supported, and essentially what that allows you to do, that if you want to skip CBB2 altogether, you need
you
to take
didn't
longer.
Get Clippy with a hat.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't want just normal Clippy. I'm going to wait for Clippy with hat. You can actually skip that particular CBB and hit the next one in that essentially approach there as well. So that's really, you know, the current branch for business, first release for current branch for business. I like that name the best. Approach for how we do updates as well.
There's another one that's
there's
not
one
on
other
slide.
Branch that we've recently introduced, which is called the Insiders branch. And so the Insiders branch is basically very new features before we've even stabilized and socialized them at all.
Yes, it's the release before the first release.
That's right. Yes. And that's actually the way to think about that is it's actually first release for current
for
branch.
For current branch.
Yeah, that's FRCB, not FRCBB.
CBB. Yep. Yeah.
Acronyms are fun, guys.
We, of course, figured this out 10 minutes before you, so that's why we're here talking about it now.
So, how do you manage all of this stuff? This seems really hard and complex. The simplest way is essentially the new Office deployment tool. You can define a new config XML, and you just choose the branch you want to be in.
Everyone familiar with this config.xml layout? Lots of nods, good.
Branch equals business, branch equals current. Branch equals first release business, branch
Isn't
equals
it
first
FR business.
FR business, sorry, And branch equals first FR current are the kind of options you have there.
It's not
and really,
French.
The way to think about that is that's just the folder you're looking at the CDN, and that's essentially all that's controlling in that approach there. You can control it also in group policy. You can set a group policy setting, update branch, you're going to set particular target versions if you want to set that as well. And you can do all that through group policy settings as well.
And that's probably the ticket if you're going to have one of two things. First of all, if you're running pilot groups, you might find that running separate group policies for them is something. You might already be doing that for Windows pilot groups. You could use those same group policies to apply a different branch for pilot users that you do for the rest of your organization. And again, if you're back to that scenario I mentioned before where some subset of users need to be held off or stay on a particular branch for some reason, you could again use group policy to enforce that as well. Yeah.
So this is kind of, it's a new concept. This is the first time we've changed the way that we do branch updates and feature releases in Office in 30 years. So there's a long time coming in this particular approach. There's no more service packs. This model replaces service packs. So it's an important thing to start to think about now. Plenty of resources on this. We'll talk about it more again tomorrow, and we'll try and explain it differently with either, not a Clippy, but maybe Max the dog or something like that instead. But the approach here is it gives you more options, more flexibility of how you want to define those updates. You may define, for instance, that your sales force, we don't care about them. They're always out of the office. They're not connected. They can just be on current branch for business. They can party on with the new features every month, and we're not going to worry about them.
No, every 4 months if they're on current branch for business.
Yeah, and if they're on current branch for business, they get those features every 4 months. Maybe that's our finance team that we want to do a little bit more testing and sociability, and then perhaps our IT team on first release current branch for business so we can anticipate any issues that our finance team may come into as well. So you have the options now of setting all these different approaches here as well. This aligns really well with Windows 10's approach as well. So with Windows 10, they have the same approach of current branch for business. And the notion here is that you can match the two together. And so in February, in June, and in October, you'll have not only Office updates, but also Windows updates at the same time. If you're on the current branch for business approach, you can do the one change notification, the one email, and you can start to manage these things together as the one change operation. So really that gives you two choices, features every month, features every 3 months through that process as well.
That being said, if you think back a little bit earlier, we were talking about the Office 365 Pro Plus product and the Office Professional Plus 2016 product.
Yeah.
There are still some scenarios where the Office 365 Pro Plus product might not be suitable.
Absolutely. And so that's, you know, this MSI model, this old traditional MSI model, is not deprecated, still supported through Office 2016 Professional Plus. But it's kind of the step before deprecated, and we'll call that legacy. And really, there's a few scenarios where this makes a little bit more sense. That you just want to set and forget a feature set, and you never touch that again. If you're using Office as part of some inbuilt 3D printing machine or whatever it else is, some operational technology asset that sits out in the field, doesn't get updated, doesn't get managed, and you want that thing to look exactly the same now as it done is in 5 years as well.
A lot of organizations have server-based workloads that they run that, you know, on a schedule, for example, take some Excel spreadsheet and run a macro across it and then output the data and it all happens automatically.
Yes.
I'm not going to name names. Some of you are in the room.
Yeah, there are some cases like that. You have that machine in the corner running Access 97 that is, you know, doing something incredibly important. And everyone that was around that machine when it was built is now retired. You have to raid the retirement village just to support the
hasn't
changes.
Been rebooted in 16
right.
years because everybody's
exactly.
afraid.
It doesn't handle leap years well, all those sorts of things. You know the systems you have like that. And in those systems, if you're building new systems like that, shame on you, but maybe you want to consider the MSI model so that it operates the same in 10 years' time as well. Mission-critical systems, systems that are underground, systems like on submarines, all those sorts of things is where that MSI model that doesn't connect to Office 365, that isn't reliant on Office 365 services, still make a lot of sense.
One thing missing from this list that was certainly on this list on a similar slide 3 years ago when we presented this content is shared computing scenarios. I repeat, that is not on this list. So if you didn't get the memo, you might have heard that previously shared computing scenarios like VDI or terminal services had to use the MSI build. That's long since fixed, probably, 2 years ago now?
That's right, yeah.
So those are all fine on Office Pro Plus now, so just note that they're not there anymore.
Yeah. So, and the other way to think about this is that current branch will give you updates up to every month. Mm-hmm. current branch of business will give you updates every 3 months.
This will give you updates
MSI every decade. Gives you the ability not to get updates for up to 10 years.
Yeah.
And so depending on when you start using it. So it's a great model and a really powerful model, but really the important thing isn't so much the model, that it's the acknowledgement that change is coming to the Office client. The Office client is no longer this thing that is set, the features are set, and it won't change until the next version comes out. Now we'll see these features coming and changing much more regularly as well. Config Manager changes, and our shipping is part of that product and will be available in Q1 2016, the first 3 months of next calendar year.
This is pretty cool.
The ability of integrating things like Skype for Business, calling through Skype for Business, a Skype for Business client to join conference call numbers and those sorts of things, all done through Office 365, is coming very soon as well. The ability to do PSTN integration with the Office 365 Skype for Business cloud service.
With no on-premises infrastructure whatsoever.
Yeah, to start to replace some of those traditional PBX systems is coming to the Office client as well. Changes to reporting to the Admin Center reporting dashboard are coming pretty soon as well. DLP policy tips in Skype for Business, the ability to share files through Skype for Business, we'll run them through those same DLP, those same transport rules that we run through Exchange is coming for the Skype for Business client as well. And of course, enterprise data protection technologies are coming to the client. And essentially, that's tied with the next update of Windows, which I'm not allowed to tell you what the dates are. But that's coming as well. And these are just some of the features, some of the more IT-focused features that are coming to Office 365 Pro Plus, let alone the smaller features, the end-user features, the new PowerPoint transitions, and those sorts of things that will trickle out into the Office clients as well. So, summary of all the stuff we've covered here. This is really the motion of Office as a service. This is what it means to have a client software that starts to update itself at the speed of the cloud services that it's dependent on. Office 365 Pro Plus, this click-to-run model, allows us to have these continuous updates, this always up-to-date approach. The updates that we're adding in here are based on user feedback. We've always loved user feedback. We've loved hearing about the features that you want us to add into the product and those sorts of things. Unfortunately, in the past, we were only interested in listening about them once every 3 years. Now, in this process, we're always listening. We're able to take on these ideas, move these ideas, and even features that only take 2 hours to implement and change are much easier to now put into the client and those sorts of things.
Easier to consume.
Easier to.
And you know, if that statement that Al just made excites you, and it should, because this rate of change has never before been seen in this part of the industry, then cling on to that and be excited. But at the same time, understand that there is someone in your organization, they probably work as a developer, but there is someone inside your organization who does not see the world the same way that you now do since you heard Alistair say that. And so cling on to everything you've heard today and be ready and expect that you need to take this story back to your organizations and help shift the perception around what Office updates look like, what the risk factors are and aren't in relation to Office Pro Plus or client updates. Be ready to answer those questions and take that journey on with you.
That's right. The bunch of features we talked about, Bits, SCCM integration, the flexible update model, user activations, all important features, but pale in the comparison to the features that we'll start adding going forward as we get into the client. So things to think about. If you want to move to first release, turn it on in the portal, start to test it now, work on what your strategy is for updates, how you're going to consume them inside of your own organization, how you're going to integrate with line of business apps. You can use first release to check out those features as they become available. Report back fixes, any bugs you find in first release. First release is the time
Eight
that we want to fix.
Before they're going to hit the
CVB. Yeah, that's the time we want to fix those features. And if you're new to Pro Plus completely, get ready. So now's a great time to start investigating this. February 9th, it's a Tuesday. It's a patch Tuesday to be more specific. That's when we're actually going to roll out the current branch for business for the first time in the Office client, the build that we've been stabilizing over the last 4 months as well. Start to prepare that, you can start to package that, and get ready to go in February 2016. So with that, we We have 28 seconds remaining, so thank you very much for attending.
Thanks very much.
So fill out your evaluations, please, so we're allowed to come back next time. There's plenty more content that we've got recorded from myself, my team, and a bunch of people around the world as well on the Virtual Academy site. And we're happy to take any questions up the front if you have any other questions.
And guys, don't forget, if you saw our jet flying over the top on Tuesday, we still have the competition open to win a ride in the jet, the Fast Track Jet Experience. So head over to our booth on the exhibition and get your badge scanned to enter the competition.
I read about that, Yoni.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for your attention.